Welcome to Project Patient Care, spotlighting patient change agents. Each month, we will highlight people that are having a major impact through their passionate approach to improving health and healthcare for all. Pat Merriweather Argus, Executive Director of Project Patient Care, will be your host for this series. To listen to the recorded podcasts or view our newsletters, please go to www.projectpatientcare.org. Greetings, and thank you for joining us on the Project Patient Care podcast series. Project Patient Care, or PPC, is a not-for-profit organization that brings the voice of the patient, family, and caregiver into health and healthcare conversations. This is a very exciting podcast today, as we will be discussing the importance and value of sharing the patient's story. The patient's story provides insight into what patients are experiencing and feeling and how that shapes their perception of care and also what it could be. Patient stories and the patient experience are not only entering into provider improvement initiatives, but they are shaping research, healthcare policy, disease management, population health, and health and healthcare overall. During our conversation, we will be referring to patients, but please note the reference to patients includes persons, patients, families, and caregivers, as they all play a major role in health and healthcare. Today, we have with us an icon in bringing the voice of the patients to the forefront, Sue Sheridan. Sue is the Director of Patient and Family Engagement at the Society to Improve Diagnosis in Medicine. Sue most recently served as the Patient and Family Advisor at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, known as CMS. Sue helped integrate the person and family engagement strategy throughout the CMS community. Prior to her joining CMS, Sue served as the Director of Patient Engagement for the Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute, known as PCORI, where Sue led the patient engagement team, which developed and implemented programs and processes to encourage meaningful engagement of patients and other stakeholders. Sue led the patient engagement team, which developed and implemented programs and processes to encourage meaningful engagement of patients and other stakeholders in all PCORI's activities and the research that they funded. As you will find, Sue has a lengthy history of addressing patient safety, quality, and experience. Sue, can you briefly tell us about your work at the Society to Improve Diagnosis in Medicine and how you have brought the voice of the patient to the forefront in diagnostic research?
Well, thanks, Pat, first of all, for engaging me in this podcast to talk about the power of the patient voice in creating a safer healthcare system. Like you said, I'm the Director of Patient Engagement at the Society of Improved Diagnosis and Medicine, and for the purpose of this podcast, we'll call that SIDM for short. And their vision is to create a world where no patients are harmed by diagnostic error. So my role in patient engagement at SIDM is to integrate patients into all of the diagnostic improvement efforts that we do at SIDM to ensure that the work that we do is truly patient-centered and that it reflects the priorities and the outcomes that really matter to patients. And as we know, diagnostic error is getting a lot of attention right now, is one of the biggest causes of patient safety events. And so this is gaining a lot of momentum in this area, both in our government and throughout healthcare. So the way that I am integrating patients and family members is in all the work that SIDM does. And the way we hope to create a safer healthcare system and better and faster diagnosis is by, number one, raising awareness through research, through reforming medical education, through practice improvement, and through policy making. And so I'm actually engaging the patient community in all that we're doing. And Pat, you brought up research. Something that I'm proud to share that we partnered with Project Patient Care is that we recruited and trained 20 patient partners from influential patient organizations such as American Heart Association, Women Heart, Sepsis Alliance, patient organizations where diagnostic errors are unfortunately common within that patient community. And we train them to partner as research partners in diagnostic research. And we graduated 20 patient partners who are now, many of them are engaged in research as partners. Another example of how we're integrating patients is in the medical education, where we're embedding patients as partners in identifying curriculum that's important for medical education for med ed students and interns and residents. CITM actually has the opportunity to address 3,000 educators and deans of medical schools this August, where we're going to be talking about the importance of embedding curricula where that it teaches patients how to listen and how to engage patients in getting the right diagnosis. We also focus on the area of practice improvement. And one thing that CITM is doing is we're going to be hosting a roundtable this fall with PFAC to really acknowledge their role as change agents and drivers in healthcare systems, and actually drivers, you know, all the way to the C-suite, to help raise awareness about diagnostic errors in healthcare systems and how to engage patients in getting the right diagnosis, and also how to implement a system within the healthcare system to reduce diagnostic errors. So we think PFAC are going to play a large role. Our last area where we integrate patients is in policymaking. We did a HILT briefing last fall, and we brought in the patient community to speak to the Senate aides and other workers on the Hill. That made a big impact. So we're always trying to find ways to integrate patients in all of the work that we do to ensure that their voice is not only heard, but their voice is woven in the design and the planning and the conduct of everything we do. Another area that we focus on is collecting patient stories. And so you can see on CITM the story bank that we have. And that now these stories of patients and caregivers who have experienced diagnostic error in one way or another, some of these stories now we are learning are being used in med ed, you know, as medical student education, and some of these scenarios are being used for research. So we're very proud of that, really bringing to life diagnostic error by bringing in the patients. We also have a patient resource area on our webpage to really equip and mobilize patients to be active throughout the diagnostic process to ensure that they get the right diagnosis in a timely way.
Well, Sue, we are so fortunate to have you spearheading this area, because I feel confident with your leadership and your engagement of patients that we're going to see major changes in the way that diagnostic research is being done, but also benefiting the patients. Sue, I know you started out sharing your own personal story to help shape policy and drive change. Can you share with us, because some of the listeners may not be familiar with your background, can you share with us your experience and how you drove change?
Well, that's what brings me to this podcast. This is what brought me into healthcare. You know, my profession was international trade finance banker, but because of two significant patient safety events that both were diagnostic errors, I jumped into the healthcare system to share my voice and hopefully be part of change. So my journey in patient safety all started with my son, Cal, who is now 24, born in 1995, who fell through the cracks several times in the diagnostic process. And Cal suffered brain damage from his newborn jaundice because of a series of system and healthcare factors, where his bilirubin was never tested until it was too late. We found there was a lack of education on behalf of the nurses and the residents. There were documentation errors. You know, my concerns about my son's symptoms were dismissed as being an over-anxious first-time mom. And so I knew I couldn't change Cal. Cal now has significant cerebral palsy. He's speech impaired, hearing impaired, motor impaired. He's bright. He's funny. But he had challenges that he never should have had. And so I really wanted to be part of changing the healthcare system. And I embarked with other mothers whose children also suffered brain damage from not getting a bilirubin test. And all of our kids in the 1990s who suffered brain damage were visually assessed. So we decided that through a model of partnership, we would reach out to the very system that harmed our children. And we partnered with the Joint Commission, with the Centers for Disease Control, with NIH, with HRSA, you know, basically with HHS, We partnered with nursing organizations. We partnered with the American Academy of Pediatrics. We partnered with March of Dimes. And we created a big coalition where we all agreed that we wanted to ensure that babies did not suffer brain damage from newborn jaundice and that all babies did get a bilirubin test. So the partnership was alive and well for over 8 years. We got some funding money from CDC and HRSA and NIH to conduct research. The Joint Commission issued Sentinel of an alert and implemented mandatory reporting of bilirubins over a certain level. The NQF reported that bilirubins over 30, which typically led to corneal dystrophy, was considered another event. You know, HRSA funded focus groups all over the United States to help change parent education materials. HHS did a big national campaign directly to parents on encouraging parents to ask about a bilirubin test. And the American Academy of Pediatrics, after 8 or 9 years, did revise their guidelines to indicate that a universal bilirubin test on all newborns, either through a bilirubin, the blood test, or a transcutaneous test, was the safest way to prevent crinecterus. So that right there is a model of taking a bad outcome, you know, failures in our healthcare system, reaching out to the very healthcare system, bringing them together. We kind of wove a tapestry together of healthcare agencies that really we learned worked independently, but we brought them all together to work as a coalition and changed guidelines and implemented Joint Commission, you know, expectations of hospitals and standards. 4 years after Cal's story, my husband, Pat, was diagnosed with a mass in his neck, and his mass was identified by MRI. They surgically removed it. We were told that it was a benign tumor, and we learned that later that there was an error, that the tumor actually was found to be a malignant synovial cell sarcoma, but that pathology document got lost and never was communicated to the neurosurgeon or to us. So Pat's cancer during those 6 months metastasized, and his chances to survive, you know, were reduced drastically. He went through 7 surgeries, 9 months of chemotherapy, several rounds of radiation, but because of the metastasization into his spinal cord, the healthcare system couldn't save his life. So Pat died when he was 45. Cal was 6 at the time. During that time, we had a little girl, Mackenzie, and she was 4, and, you know, we lost that heir. So in terms of partnering with the system to assure that that didn't happen again, I'm sad to report that systematically, nationally, we have not successfully changed that, you know, a sweeping change to ensure that all patients get their malignant pathologies. But I do want to share that we did partner with that very hospital, and they did implement immediately a policy that did provide pathology reports directly to the patients via their patient portal. And so I hope this is a call to all healthcare systems and clinicians listening that I think it's very important to ensure that patient portals offer direct access to real-time test results, including clinical notes like open notes, to engage the patient as a second set of eyes to ensure that things don't slip through the cracks.
Oh, Sue, it's a tremendous journey that you've been on, and it took a lot of courage, a lot of strength after the loss of Pat and certainly the harm that Cal experienced to really go on. And somehow you have risen to the challenge and actually are benefiting everyone through your activism and through your collaboration with so many organizations.
You brought up one of my favorite words, and that's courage. And, you know, I don't know what it took on my part. I knew I had to change something. And so maybe it was courage, but the courage that I really saw and want to celebrate and elevate, especially for these listeners, is that the courage that it took for the healthcare system to invite me and others in, you know, the courage of the CEO at the Joint Commission to listen to me and to invite us to help write the first Sentinel event alert ever authored by the patient community. It took courage of the CDC, NIH and HRSA and AAP and everybody involved, because back then the doors were really closed to the patient community. And it took courage, and many of them actually received pushback from their colleagues. So I want to also acknowledge the courage of everybody in the healthcare system who opened the doors to me and the other mothers, and we truly became partners. I wanted to just acknowledge that.
There's so many patients that have experienced medical errors, some that have had life-threatening conditions as a result, as well as those that have just been harmed. Can you maybe explain to all of us how important the patient voice is and how their what if? I know you oftentimes talk about the what if. Can you also explain what is the what if?
That really is an organic phenomenon that as a patient, after Cal and Pat were both, you know, Pat died and Cal was harmed, and I was invited to testify before HRQ. I was invited to testify before Senate and Congress, and I usually framed my presentations in the terms of what if, to identify possible solutions to prevent what happened to Cal and Pat. So as I and we and you and others have worked over the years with hundreds, probably thousands of patients, you know, we have found that patient stories can really help identify gaps and opportunities for research, for education, to create solutions. And the way there is by hearing the patient's story and asking the simple what if. What do they wish would have happened? It's the question that goes through my mind, healthcare system's mind, clinicians' minds, when something goes wrong. The what if immediately comes to our mind. So this is something we need to harness. And as we've worked with patients, and I'm going to give an example, Pat, of the patients improving research in diagnosis, the project that Project Patient Care partnered on with CITM, where we worked with patients who had experienced devastating diagnostic errors themselves or their family. And we actually encouraged for them to learn how to share their narrative, and they actually mapped their stories onto the National Academy of Medicine's diagnostic framework. And that really helped identify these risk points or these junctures where diagnostic errors occurred in their families, and then for the patients to develop their what if. And so it was fascinating to witness. And, you know, those what ifs are really opportunities for error recovery. Some of the examples of the what ifs are like, what if they had reviewed my history in the EHR? What if the EHR didn't hide some of these incidental findings of my kidney cancer? What if they had made me aware of my risk factors of stroke being an African-American woman? What if bias of me being a female hadn't been a factor in my diagnosis? What if I had had access to real-time test results and clinical notes, such as open notes? So these examples of what if, it is an elevation of points along the diagnostic error or points along the patient narrative that really are opportunities for error recovery. So they're rich sources. It's a rich and it's an easy method of working with patients and their narrative to distill their narrative and really identify the what if. And this really identifies, especially in the paired project, you know, gaps in research, gaps in care, gaps in education, gaps in healthcare systems, gaps in teamwork that I think we can all leverage to create a safer healthcare system.
I have to say, being involved with that paired project with you, that the what if was a real game changer for everyone. As they sat there and worked it out, understood where their diagnostic error occurred, and raising the issue of what if. And I remember being at the meeting of CITM's Diagnostic Error in Medicine, where there were hundreds of researchers, and when the patients stood up and did their what if statements, just the tears and the support that was lended by the research community, it was tremendous. So you have certainly had an impact on affecting change personally in the patient partners as well as in the research community. Thank you. I know you've made your life's work to bring about positive change in healthcare for so many by bringing the voice of the patient to the forefront. What do you see as some of your most important accomplishments in bringing about change?
That's a good question. You know what I think is the most gratifying work that I've done is working with large organizations. I was at the WHO for 7 years I was at McCrory for 5 years. I was only at CMS for a year, and now the Society to Improve Diagnosis Medicine for a year. But what gives me gratitude is working with these large organizations and creating an infrastructure and opportunities within those organizations to bring in patients and empower those patients. So I get great joy when I see other patients who have their stories, who live with, you know, chronic illness, who have had a diagnostic error, you know, all these patients that have stories, and to empower them to be part of change. So great gratification when I see other moms, other people, other citizens stepping up within big organizations and having the opportunity to drive change. You know, when you bring in a patient, it changes the conversation. So I guess it's a two-prong. Very gratified. I've had the privilege of working in large organizations that have agreed to create infrastructure and programs and guidelines and frameworks that bring in patients into their organizations, and then to really witness some of those patients become tremendous patient leaders and change agents in the areas that matter most to them. So I think that's what I really feel appreciative and feel that I've been able to make a difference in many patients' lives because they've been able to step in to research, education, policy, and feel the gratification themselves. And it's actually very healing for patients to be engaged in change. So I would say that's my most gratifying accomplishment.
Well, you certainly have left a footprint and have changed organizations, and all those that you mentioned have been changed because of you, and certainly the patients have been affected as well. We'd like to give our presenters on the PPC podcast a magic wand. If you had the magic wand and could make some changes today in healthcare for patients, what would your top changes be?
A couple off the top of my head. Now, if I had a magic wand, if I were Tinkerbell, I'd wave that wand and what I just said. You know, I get such joy out of mentoring and encouraging and enabling other patients to be engaged in creating a safer healthcare system. So one of my visions, one of my dreams is to have a national patient leadership academy. So many patients who want to take that first step into change simply don't know how. And as we know that until recently, diagnostic improvement and patient safety improvement efforts have been primarily led by researchers, academics, industry, policymakers, with actually very little input from the very users of healthcare, and that would be the patients. So I'm actually, the Society for Diagnosis and Medicine is actually trying to create a new approach. We believe a new approach includes enabling, engaging, and empowering patients and family members. You know, my vision is to really have an academy where patients who are interested, not all patients are interested in becoming advocates for change, but to get the appropriate training to make a difference in med ed and research and policy, to enable them and then engage them in research. You know, let the government know that there's this trained cadre of patients and others, and then really empower them as a community. So I would love to see with my magic wand training for patients to engage them in co-developing and delivering medical education to students and to professionals, to train them to be equal partners in research, you know, their what if to identify new research, get patients on the Hill doing public comment, testifying, getting them on technical expert panels to really drive policy that matters to patients, and then to really enable PFAS around the nation to be that voice within healthcare systems to drive change. So that's one of my magic wand projects, is to have an academy where patients who want to make a difference can go to be prepared, meet others like them, and to drive change. My other magic wand project would be, well, I don't know if I'd call it a project, but vision, is that there would be a national patient safety agency. I think something that surprised me, Pat, when I started first trying to share what happened to Pat and Cal to our leaders, is that there is no one in charge of patient safety. To this day, I'm still shocked that there's no one in charge of making sure patients are safe in healthcare. So I would love to see a national patient safety agency where there is somebody in charge of patient safety and where patients can report patient safety events and be part of developing the solution in partnership with other parts of our healthcare system. right now there is no place for patients to report safety events. So I would like to see somebody committed to this, and it would demonstrate that they're taking patient safety seriously. So those are my two magic wand wishes.
Well, I have a feeling, knowing you, Sue, that those two magic wand wishes will be granted because I have a feeling that you will continue to be effective and to promote and push for change for all the patients. So I have no doubts that you probably don't need a magic wand because you've got yourself and your energy.
Thank you, Pat. A little magic wand would be helpful.
Is there anything else you'd like to share with us before we close today?
I think the only thing I would like to say is, you know, I've been engaged in patient safety for 24 years now. I saw it have a lot of attention when To Err Is Human, the IOM report, came out in 1999 or 1988. And there was a lot of energy, and it was a priority of our government, of healthcare systems, of clinicians, of reporters, of medical educators. It made a big splash, but then it fell off the radar. I think it was, you know, replaced with other topics, such as important topics, such as population health and value and saving money. It scares me that it lost some of its momentum, and I'm hoping we can put patient safety back on the radar at the top. There's nothing more important. After working at CMS, after working at PCORI, after working at WHO, I can say, and after living what the experience that I've lived, there is nothing more important than patient safety and saving lives. So I hope the listeners of this podcast will keep it at the top of their list.
I agree with you, Sue. And it seems like we're at the point where we know our healthcare system could be improved. We know there's harm that occurs to patients, and the time is now. And again, I just think with your leadership and your promotion and your talking about the events, as well as patients sharing their story, that it will make a difference.
I agree. And thank you, Pat.
I want to thank you, Sue, for sharing with us the important work that you are doing to bring the voice of the patient to the forefront and improve healthcare quality and safety for all. You've been a catalyst that has bent the patient safety arc so that it bends toward justice and safer care. You are a truly remarkable person that has worked to make care safer for all of us and have been relentless in supporting the voice of patients locally, nationally, and globally. Thank you for all you do in making a difference in the lives of so many people. And as Sue would like to say, I know she'd say, thank you to all the patients that are lending their voice to quality and safety, and to the providers that have the courage, as Sue said, to listen to the patients and create change. If you would like to get in touch with Sue, please go to www.projectpatientcare.org and look under podcast for her contact information. Thank you.